Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. We've talked about on this program about the art of mindfulness and how we can use it in all avenues of our life. Our next guest, though, is going to talk to us not only about what she's been able to learn as a teacher, but also as a recognized leader when it comes to mindfulness in the classroom. We're going to be talking to Patricia Tiss Jennings today about her new book, Mindfulness for Teachers, Simple Skills for Peace and Productivity in the Classroom. And I think you guys will get not only what your profession is, I think you'll get that there's so much that we can learn about mindfulness and how we can all better apply it in our own lives. But Tish, hello to you and welcome to the program.
Hi, Cyrus. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you on with us because we have talked about the art of mindfulness quite a bit this year already. And what I think is so great about your book, and I alluded to this in my conversation with you before we went on here, Tish, is that I think this book is something that will really benefit us all if we're open to it and are able to apply some of the examples that you've given us. What has it been like for you? As I mentioned, this is something that is not new for you to be able to sharing. What has it been like for you, Tish, to be able to see the people that are not only getting the message from the book, but also in the work that you've been able to do in the classroom?
I'm very excited because I'm getting a lot of very positive feedback, especially from people who have been working in classrooms for a while, and especially those who have been trying to apply mindfulness in their work as teachers. I think what I've done is I've articulated some understanding of my own experience about working on applying it over the years in a way that teachers really are responding to. But beyond that, I'm also getting a lot of great feedback from people who are not teachers who see it as an example of how we can live more mindfully, not just practicing it while we sit on a cushion somewhere.
Exactly. And that is really one of the things that I took away from it myself. Tish, I love the fact, as you mentioned, about your own experience, because you share a lot about your own journey in the book. And what I think that does, for one thing, it helps us understand that we're not the only one who's gone through this and had to make adjustments. But also, you've been able to share with us how you were able to do it. One of the great examples you give in the book, Tish, is when you first started off teaching and, you know, and the challenges that can come with that. But you talk about how a supervisor was able to give you some really constructive thoughts about ways that you could be more effective, and that was in what you were saying. And the example that you give in the book, Tish, is, you probably remember it, where she says, you know, do you realize that every time that you are telling them to do something, you end it with a question, okay? And it made you think about, you know, what you were saying, and that became one of the areas you were able to work on. I mean, what was that like for you to reflect on, Tish, how you yourself have been able to apply mindfulness, and what has it been like for you to see the way that examples like that have helped others to do it?
Well, one thing I realized back then, and this understanding has really developed over the years, mm-hmm. is that in order to be a really good teacher, or in order to apply mindfulness in our lives, we have to monitor ourselves. We have to be aware of what we're saying and doing. And often the way we respond to situations or what we say in certain contexts are kind of automatic. It's like we're operating on what I call automatic pilot. Mm-hmm. We're not necessarily realizing what we're saying. And in that context, in the classroom context, it's not uncommon in our culture to couch what we're saying with some kind of politeness, like okay. And in the adult world, when we say that, we know that it's actually, you know, a request. But children don't understand that, and depending on what culture they come from, that may not even be part of their culture. And so when a teacher says that, to many children, especially younger ones, they take that as an option. If you say, okay, that means you could say no, right?
Right.
And that, it's interesting because now that I've come full circle and I'm actually teaching students at the University of Virginia who are going to become teachers, elementary teachers, I see this over and over again, and this habit of being overly polite when you really need to be authoritative. You need to be kind and authoritative, but you don't have to be overly polite when you're working with kids. It doesn't really help them stay on task when you do that. It gives them the impression that of what you're trying to get them to do is sort of a favor. rather than what they're supposed to be doing. And so I see that as the crux of a lot of problems with discipline in classrooms, is that there's a mismatch between the way that the teacher's discourse style, the way they're talking, and the way the student understands it. And in order to actually change that, you have to notice yourself. You have to be mindful of yourself. And as I described in my book at the beginning, I kept catching myself after the fact. I'd say it, and then I'd stop myself. And then I realized that not only was it a form of speech that I was using, but it was an actual feeling in my body that went along with it. It was like I was a little bit shy about telling them what to do. I felt a little uncomfortable telling them what to do, and that's why I was saying okay. And once I realized that, I could shift the internal feeling I had in my body to being more authoritative, so that when I talked to them, my words were more explicit and more effective, because then my students knew what I was actually asking them to do, and that it wasn't a choice.
Right, exactly. Because as you said, I mean, when you phrase things certain ways, and we all do it. I mean, I know I have my words that I have picked up over the years, either from places I've lived or things, and I'll say things, and my big one, Tish, is you know. And so that is one of the things I'm more aware of when I'm speaking to people. I also love the fact, I'm going to come back to this, I also love the fact in the book, you bring up another great point. I don't have children of my own. I volunteer with classrooms a lot in my home state of Mississippi, Tish, so I don't work every day with kids. But when I normally do, I'm able to really see the way how even some who may seem as though they are resistant to trying new things, how if you do approach them differently, it does help them to kind of warm up. You talk about that in the book, how we all kind of come, as you call it in the book, with our own script and our own idea of what is going on, whether it is the truth or not. We kind of come with that, and I thought that's so true in all of our lives. How important has it been for you not to allow that script to paint with a wide brush, you know, not only the kids in front of you, but also, of course, those who might be benefiting from what you have to share?
Well, you know, it's a constant process for me, because, you know, once you start working on in this area, and once you, especially when you start articulating it like I have, you kind of have to practice what you preach all the time.
Right.
So what I found is when I start feeling something uncomfortable, like when I start having an emotion that I feel uncomfortable, like if I start feeling a little frustrated or a little annoyed or a little depressed, or when I have a feeling that feels uncomfortable, the first thing I do is stop and reflect and take a breath, because most of the time it's a result of a script. Our scripts are actually, the reason why we have scripts is they evolve to help us survive under conditions that we don't live in anymore, conditions where our lives were threatened a lot. And we know from the research that our uncomfortable emotions are signals that we need to pay attention to, because they have something to do with our survival. However, today, most of those signals are not related to our physical survival. They're really related to our sense of psychological survival. They're really more a result of our programmed past, or our egos, whatever you want to call it. It's the part of ourselves that feels like we have to defend ourselves. But it's not really a physical threat. It's really a psychological threat. And when I do that, when I take that moment, it becomes really clear what my script is. Oh, I don't like people who drive slowly. Feel like I need to get there in a hurry, because I have a script about being late. So this person driving in front of me really slowly is really annoying me, because I'm feeling rushed because I have to be there on time. Because if I'm late, that's bad. And that's my script, right? So when I go, oh, that's my script, I can go, okay, look, I'm not going to make this person drive any faster. I should just take a few breaths and go with what's happening. If I'm a little late, it's not the end of the world. You know, that's one way I use my mindfulness to reappraise a situation, so that I can be less reactive and more responsive to situations.
Yeah, I think that is really a great thing for all of us to keep in mind. I want to say, for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm excited today to welcome to our program Patricia Tish Jennings. She's the author of the book Mindfulness for Teachers, Simple Skills for Peace and Productivity in the Classroom. We'll tell you all a little bit later how you can get the book for yourself and how you can stay connected with the growing, of course, organization that Tish has online. What has that been like for you, Tish? It's one thing for you to have these conversations conversations, individuals, one-on-one, or even in groups. What has it been like for you to use the internet the way that you have with your, I mean, with your following with Mindfulness for Teachers Online?
It's been really rewarding because I keep finding so many people that resonate with what I've been expressing and actually building upon what I've been expressing. And I think for me, that's what's most rewarding is, you know, as I've been getting up in age, seeing younger people following in my footsteps and actually building upon what I've been doing, graduate students, other new younger faculty people who are really seeing this as a new avenue for the way we understand our interactions with others in our lives, and particularly in the classroom. So I'm feeling very, very hopeful that these approaches can really make a difference in education today.
Yeah, and I think that is the great thing. I should say for those who might be, you know, maybe you have not been a part of our conversations we've had in the past about mindfulness, I want to share something that kind of will help you to better understand what Tish and I are talking about today. She actually shares it in the chapter, What is Mindfulness? A great question to be able to ask. You write this, Tish, in the book on page 21, mindful awareness is characterized by curiosity and openness to both the nature of experience and the quality of the awareness itself without judgment or preconceived. Conceptions ties in perfectly with what we were talking about earlier with the script. This may include noticing and exploring any preconceptions that arise. And what is great about that, what you share in the book, Tish, even as you're going through talking about, as we were dealing with earlier, about the scripts and how those can be, you also help us to understand the importance of having the right attitude. And this, is a large one that I think we can apply in so many avenues in our lives, and that is, of course, the power of positivity. Do you think that has really been one of the big keys for you to finding success, not only in the class, but also just in life, being able to look at things differently?
Absolutely. The more I understand the power of positive emotions, the more I really see how, paying attention to our positive emotions can be transformative. What we now know, mostly from the work of Barbara Fredrickson, is that the positive emotions that we experience, like joy, happiness, awe, inspiration, things like that, they're very brief, they're very short. Love is another one. Actually, love is the most commonly experienced positive emotion. But every time we experience those emotions, it triggers some physiological changes that really promote resilience and help protect us from, you know, the other types of adversity we face on a regular basis. And what I noticed about myself was that while I have a lot of these positive emotions, I don't often savor them or I don't often remember them. And the more I pay attention to them when they happen, notice how my chest is feeling when I'm feeling love, feel that warmth and feel that that sort of the exuberance of joy, that when my body's tingling with joy, those feelings, those wonderful feelings, when you notice them when they're happening and you spend the time to savor them, then they become very powerful tools for building resilience and promoting well-being and promoting positive relationships with others.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that, and we don't have to go as much into it. It's totally up to you how much we talk about this. But when you were mentioning the tingling, one of the segments that I noticed I wanted to talk about, it leads directly to that, and that was your experience with Sammy, Tish. You talked about that, what it was like for him to be able to form the word cat and what that did for him and how excited he was, you know, that he could write that word. And you said this about it on page 92 about that experience. As I think and write about this experience, I get goosebumps all over. My body tingles with joy. I can sit with this feeling and savor it like a delicious piece of gourmet chocolate. When I do this, I'm using positivity to build my resilience. That was, to me, a powerful thing, to be able to visualize it that way. Is that what you think we all can benefit from, being able to think about those good things and allow those to kind of be what drives us and motivate us versus the opposite?
Certainly. I certainly believe this, and I've experienced it myself. And the other thing that we've learned over the years with emotion research is that when you're feeling down for whatever reason, if you take a moment to notice that that's what you're feeling and just go back and think about a time when you were happy, just think back on a time that you were really happy, focus your mindful awareness on that memory, and try to put yourself back in that place. And what you'll notice is that your body will change, your feeling state will change and shift. And when you start practicing that, you realize how flexible your emotional states can be, and that you can actually, that we have a lot more control over our emotional states than we realize often. Another really interesting little factoid that I've learned over the years from Paul Ekman, who I worked with at UC San Francisco, who's a very well-known emotion researcher, is that when you smile, even if you're not feeling happy, if you put your mouth in the smile position, you'll start feeling better. That somehow our physiology is so connected to our emotional states that even a simple smile will change how we feel. I think that's really amazing.
Right. It really is. And I think it goes to, again, the larger point that this is something that all of us can benefit from, no matter who we are, whether we're in the classroom or just going through our day-to-day activities. We can all benefit from this. Again, everyone, you're listening to Conversations Live today. We're speaking to Patricia Tisch Jennings. We're talking to her about her book, Mindfulness for Teachers, Simple Skills for Peace and Productivity in the Classroom. And again, we'll be reminding you guys here in just a moment how you can stay connected with Tisch, as well as, of course, how you can get the book for yourself. One of the quotes that you use in the book, and there are many of them, but one of my favorite ones is found on page 182 in the chapter Mindfulness and School Transformation, Tisch, and that is the quote from Gandhi, "Be the change you wish to see in the world." And you say this in a very powerful sentence, "Transformation begins with the individual." Do you think that is one thing that we can all remember, that is we're going in and we're thinking about, of course, you know, helping, especially in this context of the classroom, helping a child to learn, that really it begins with making sure that we're bringing the best of ourselves into whatever situation that we're in?
Well, that quote is my motto, that be the change you wish to see in the world. I think that that is one of the most important quotes I've ever heard. And it reminds me day after day that in order to make any changes, I have to first focus on myself, because that's really the place that I have the most control. And one thing I've also learned when it comes to classroom management, often teachers learn that they are supposed to be in control of their classroom. I mean, those words, in control, play a big role in the understanding of classroom management. But the fact of the matter is, when you're in a classroom full of 25 kids, you are not in control. You cannot control those individual children. It's just impossible. You can control yourself, and that is number one. You can also set up the environment and set up the situation so that your students can be engaged in what they're doing. You set up rules, you set up guidelines, you follow procedures that promote the kinds of behaviors you're looking for. But the thought that you could actually control children creates this dissonance, this cognitive dissonance between what's really happening and what you're being told you're supposed to be doing. So I think when teachers remember that they are the change, and that the best way to think about managing their classroom is to manage themselves, I think it becomes a lot easier. Because, it's, you know, managing yourself is not all that easy, but it's sure a lot easier than trying to control, you know, 25, 30 kids.
Right. Exactly. What a great reminder for us, too. And I think, too, it does show that there is work for all of us to do, that it really is a day-to-day practice. And that's one of the things you make very clear early on in the book. Tisch, do you think that also is what will be the key for success for us when it comes to mindfulness, making sure that it is something that we are being aware of each and every day?
I really do. I think one of the debates that's going on in the mindfulness world right now is, you know, is it just about attention? Is it really just about, you know, becoming more skillful at using our, deploying our attention, you know, and without even thinking about the issues of kindness or caring or compassion. And it's becoming really clear that the understanding of mindfulness really seems to go hand in hand with a sense of heartfulness, that, you know, that paying attention to how we're feeling and how other people are feeling and being responsive to the needs to others plays a big role in mindfulness, whether it's explicitly described that way or not.
Right, exactly. And I think, again, going to the larger point of this is something that we could all learn from in that same chapter I mentioned earlier, Mindfulness and School Transformation, on page 183, Tisch writes this, "Rather than simply training our children's minds to absorb and regurgitate facts so that they can do well in standardized tests, mindfulness has the potential to promote other valuable cognitive skills such as creative thinking, perspective taking, and innovative problem solving." And then you write this, Tisch, "These skills are critical to our collective capability for addressing the challenging problems we face today. And again, that goes for all of us, I think. So is that your hope when people read this book, Mindfulness for Teachers, regardless of what their profession, you know, might be, no matter how much they think they already are practicing mindfulness or being or living lives in a more mindful way, is it your hope that they think about how they can use this information throughout the rest of their lives?
Yes, I do, and I'm hopeful that when we are able to see through our scripts, as we were talking about earlier, and respond to situations with more awareness and more sensitivity, rather than automatically reacting from our automatic pilot tendencies, I think we have more creativity, and we have better problem solving skills, which are very, very needed. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's such an interest in mindfulness today, because it does seem to be something that we need today in order to live in a way that can move us beyond these automatic tendencies. One way I like to think about it is that the automatic tendencies that we have, the ways we respond to situations sort of unconsciously, those were very useful in the past, when we originally evolved as human beings. But today, the life we live and the context we live in, this sort of automatic tendencies actually get in our way, and they cause us a lot of trouble because they distort our perceptions. And so we are not always seeing reality as it actually is. And so sometimes we make errors and judgment and respond in ways that are not necessarily the best way to respond. And I think the more mindful we are, the more able we are to overcome or override those automatic tendencies and allow us to be more adaptive and more responsive in the current context that we live in.
Right. And I think that is the thing for sure for all of us to definitely be able to keep in mind. Again, everyone, Patricia Tisch Jennings has been our guest today. We've been talking to her about her new book, Mindfulness for Teachers, Simple Skills for Peace and Productivity in the Classroom. Great conversation with you today, Tisch. I mentioned, of course, the book is available on Amazon.com. I've already posted my review there. How can our listeners stay connected with you and find out what's coming up next for you?
Well, I have a Facebook page, Mindfulness for Teachers, so you can go to Facebook and just search for that. And on that Facebook page, I post a lot of content that's related to the book and teaching in general. They can also reach me on my webpage, which is www.tishjennings.com. And, of course, you can order the book through Amazon.
Yeah, so make sure you guys do stay connected with Tisch again through the Facebook fan page. We actually tagged it in this conversation. Again, it's Mindfulness for Teachers. Stay connected with her there. And then, of course, be able to get the book for yourself on Amazon as well. Tisch, congratulations to you on a great book and really a great conversation. And looking forward to staying connected with you.
Yeah, me too, Cyrus. And I really appreciate your questions. They were very insightful, and I enjoyed this conversation a lot.
Well, thank you. Well, my producer told me I only said, you know, one time, so I'm very thankful about that, too.
That's great.
It's a running thing for us here. They count to see how many times I'm going to say it, because it really is a big habit of mine that I've been working on. So I'm being more mindful of that. So Tisch, thank you again for the conversation. I'll be staying connected with you online, okay?
All right. Thanks, Cyrus.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. And we thank you, our listeners, for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. If you guys are joining us on the radio side or online and you missed part of the conversation, don't worry. Our online friends have made the link available for you guys to be able to listen to whatever you'd like online for free. The link is already posted on our social media pages at facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. We've already tagged Tisch on both are on at Tisch Jennings is where you guys can find her on Twitter. And then, of course, Mindfulness for Teachers, as we referenced here, you can find her there on Facebook. Just click on that link. You can listen to the show completely for free. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.